Wax Lyrical is made on the land of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. We pay respect to all elders of the past, the present, and the young ones coming up. Sovereignty was never ceded.
There's something important that the moment of stopping to listen has in common with the labyrinthian quality of attention-holding architecture. In their own ways, each enacts some kind of interruption, a removal from the sphere of familiarity. Every time I see or hear an unusual bird, time stops, and later I wonder where I was. Just as wondering, some unexpected secret passageway can feel like dropping out of linear time. Even if brief or momentary, these places and moments are retreats, and like longer retreats, they affect the way we see everyday life when we do come back to it.
Yeah. Who's that? Sorry.
So it was Joni O'Dell, mm-hmm. and she has a lot to say. I mean, she loves birds, so she's always kind of listening for things in her neighbourhood, and she's based in California. But she has this amazing perspective about how it's actually quite simple to return our attention to the actual world around us as we are further interlocked and entangled in the kind of virtual reality. That quote is really interesting because it definitely, once I did my trip and I was very into firstly recording things and capturing my environment, it was also the practice of listening for things. It became in itself very transformative, and it did almost become this kind of retreat. And without realizing it, that as a practice, it really stayed with me. So I found returning home still the same attentiveness I had for space and for sound and for different places. It fundamentally stayed with me, and it did change how I was relating to experience on, you know, day to day. And I found a very simple practice of listening for things for whatever reason. It kind of kept me in my body. It was a very meditative, and I guess you could say it's a kind of meditation in itself. But I think that kind of attentiveness has such a potential to transform the way people relate to things, even if that's just to bring us back into the world when we are further, locked into this world of literally just thinking and over-evaluating and communicating, you know, a very linked up virtual network. So that's kind of my reflections on it. And I love that quote because of that. And the whole book is fantastic.
What's the book, sorry?
So it's called How to Do Nothing, Resisting the Attention Economy.
Nice, yeah.
And she kind of plays with the idea of doing nothing. So obviously, in the kind of economic framework we use currently, to sit in a park and listen to something is definitely considered doing nothing.
Mm.
But to her, it contains, you know, an infinite amount of value.
Yeah, 100%. I can see how it's sort of meditative as well, because you're really engaging directly with the present, right? Especially if you're listening to a bird and you sort of lose track of time and space and everything.
And that, I mean, she's got a very specific, quite naturalistic view. I mean, for her, she loves birds. And I know there's lots of people that aren't that bothered by birds at all.
Sure, yeah.
So it can be really anything. I mean, I found being a Londoner and spending all of my time on transport, particularly the kind of overground trains at night, I find something really enchanting about the kind of droning of train against tracks and the movement of metal. And I find like stuff like that with listening and engaging with the environment much more, I just found moments of, you could call it moments of enchantment with like the mundane and the banal. And that's really interesting. I don't know. It was definitely something that I worked on over a few months of listening out for things. And you could argue that going to Latin America, you might find a slightly more sensuous, rhythmic soundscape around you. But regardless, you're still going to find things that you didn't hear before.
Mm.
And for me also, like when I was doing, so I still do lots of recording now, and I do it at home in London. And there was a funny moment the other day where I went to a park. And I'd been hearing this screeching, kind of this like loud noise. And I was kind of wondering what it was. And then for the first time, kind of went up to go on this hill to go kind of see, check it out, see what was making that sound. And it was all of these, kind of, they were tropical birds, like parakeets, I think. And parakeets really screech. And they clearly, I'd been told that in parts of London, we have these gangs of tropical birds that have escaped from either kind of wealthy people's houses or zoos.
Yeah.
And they've kind of repopulated parks. So now we've got this hilarious intrusion of foreign sound in, London Park. And that was like something really silly and simple, right? Like going to find like, a curiosity for
absolutely
for something that you never usually notice. But I actually was, I wanted to go see what it was. And it was a really funny layer of knowledge of my environment that I didn't have before. But it was that openness to it that allowed me to then find something out new. And that's just an example of like how I think doing what I did translates into like an everyday engagement and interest in the world.
Absolutely. I feel like it sort of takes the linearity out of like day-to-day existence. So suddenly you're allowing yourself to be curious and you're allowing yourself to go on tangents from your regular life or from your regular mental capacity and actually explore the world around you. I think that's really interesting.
I can say that, briefly. So so in context of what I've just said, two summers ago, I took an amazing trip away. So I spent 3 months traveling, and I started in Cuba for a month, and then I moved to Colombia, went down to Ecuador, and then down to Peru. And my goal of this trip was initially to record music. I play music myself, and I've always loved Latin American music, and I was really excited for the opportunity to go back to Cuba because I'd been once before, but to properly investigate and spend more time in Havana, and then to then go along to Colombia and then kind of trace the influences of the Caribbean into South America, and then to see how music would change as I shifted into the Andes. And I just literally took like a small Tascam recorder with me, quite an idealistic mindset, thinking that I can seek out interesting things and see what happens. And that was really what I did. And I found searching out sound and searching out music led me down so many interesting pathways, which is exciting that I've got the opportunity to share them now. And I'm excited to play them. I felt I was more present, and it was interesting talking to other tourists and travellers and explaining what I was interested in doing. And it's not really a very exciting or extraordinary thing to do, but I was trying to engage with another sense, because I think we must acknowledge that we're in a very image-centric culture. Like, we're very obsessed with the visual at the expense of our other senses.
For sure,
And I think fundamentally, even though music is a very important part of our culture, listening and sound, it takes a backseat, basically. So I think it's interesting to change that up and to actually take away the visual side of it. And then through re-listening to all these clips, I have to rely on my memory, but a very different kind of recalling. And it's not, and it can't be orchestrated in the same way. And I think as a point before we play any of the clips from Cuba, my real motivation for doing it initially was that the first time I visited Cuba, I loved it. I thought it was a really fantastic, vibrant place. But I found it interesting that the tourism industry there, and particularly tourists going to have their cliched week in Cuba, it was very much about orchestrating the perfect Cuban image. So it would be, you have the cigar and the vintage car in shot, and everyone wanted the same kind of golden shot, the same 100%. Golden nostalgia, which is fine. I would argue that you're kind of recreating a cliche that's quite far away from the lived reality, I think, of walking around. And that's why I was so excited by the idea of recording Cuba rather than just taking photos of it, because I felt like I was capturing, maybe in some sense, a more live, a more vibrant reality of what I felt Cuba was like. And of course, that's going to be limited in the sense that it's one person with their own intentions and their own preferences to the places they were visiting and things, which is of course accepted, but nonetheless I felt there was this kind, there is a magic in the ambience of like Havana streets
for sure.
We were just playing some just now and it gives me goosebumps because I feel so, it feels like this return to this warmth and I can feel the hot air. And I think that sense of ambience and place is really captured in the recordings. And I could be at home in the winter in London and put on my headphones and I would be transported back.
So where were we just now?
So we were in the centre of Havana, kind of the touristic side. So you get lots of the very traditional Cuban bands that play in bars and restaurants. So this kind of sound permeates every single street, which is amazing because you leave one band and then you kind of drift into the sounds of another. And in terms of the kind of musical heritage of this kind of style, it's like seen as the son cubano or bolero style, which was very much, was kind of mixed in with European influences, because obviously Cuba itself is a complete melting pot of culture.
Sure.
And this kind of slow salsa, which became incredibly popular in America. Yeah, it's a very specific mix between kind of Cuban music and a Spanish or European. I think this would be what you'd hear kind of in Buena Vista Social Club, lots of the very famous exported sounds. And I do find it with Cuban music, I think it's incredible. You hear it literally everywhere. I was in a bar in Morocco a couple of months ago and there was a band there playing Cuban music. And it's just a testament to how loved this kind of style of music is. It's very romantic, it's very nostalgic. You kind of think you're transported back to whatever, like 40s Cuba. So I wanted to put across in that recording just the noise of the city itself. When I was talking about its rhythm, I found... So it's a kind of grid city, and I would find walking up these really long streets, just taking in all of these noises happening from day-to-day life. It's for being a very relaxed place, it's also a very noisy place. And all of the windows and doors are always open, so noise seeps out of every crack, which is amazing for when you're just walking as a tourist to be an observer, just to watch and listen. So in that recording particularly, there is a woman selling her cleaning services. So very early every morning, people would start to kind of singing and selling either ice creams, yeah, or cleaning services, or this thing or this thing. It's a very vocal, sonorous environment, and it's a pleasure just to walk around. And I found San Rafael was one of the main veins of the city, and I used to walk that street most days. And then I started, after having recorded music, I thought, actually, this in itself is musical. I want to capture this as its own kind of place. As another interesting aspect of that, I first thought when I was thinking about, okay, how am I going to record this city, of marking each place and saying I'm here at this time, and kind of documenting it that way. And I did start doing that, but then I thought almost it's more interesting for me, because this is a project very much for myself, of leaving it and seeing how I could recall that myself. And seeing if I could be transported back to that place and I would know where I was walking. So it was kind of a game with myself, which was remarkably accurate. So I was talking earlier about recalling and memory, and it's fascinating to understand your kind of memory and sound, because it is unbelievable how much you can transport yourself literally back to that place. It's almost like an untapped part of memory. So I find I've got hundreds of recordings, and I can almost place myself in most of them.
It's like an audio journal of some sort, really, yeah.
Yeah, and it was. I started doing this kind of sound blog. So it was a slightly different format to documenting a trip, where I would post the sounds of where I was and would talk more kind of laterally about the experience itself, rather than I was here and then I did this and then I did this. Mm-hmm. It would very much be, this is this place, I've been exploring it, in a way that can kind of leaves it more to the imagination, because for my friends and family at home listening, I kind of wanted to give them a piece of what I was experiencing without dictating too much what it was. It definitely provokes a visual memory as well. I've got it so wrapped up in a sense of this warmth and this feeling like on my skin as much as a smell. It's something that's very entangled and distinctive. I definitely can see myself walking. I can see the streets, and that's interesting, because I didn't realize sound could be that evocative of, say, the visual memory as well. And my memory is usually really bad, as a disclaimer, so this is great to be able to transport myself back. after Havana, I then went across to Colombia. And Colombia, so I'd never been there before, and I'd read lots about it, but I was partially scared, partially excited, because I think traveling alone comes with its own challenges. And I was really intrigued to capture the contrast in sounds in Colombia, because obviously when you go up to the Caribbean coast, it has a real influence from the Caribbean. So you do see some similarities in the styles from somewhere like Cuba going to Colombia. And I was also, a part of this trip was that I was obsessed with the idea of the charango. So I used to be obsessed with soundtracks, and in particular, it was the Motorcycle Diaries, which tells the story of Che Guevara.
That's Gustavo Santaolalla?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. And lots of the soundtrack is a charango. So I was already in love with the sound of that, and I wanted to seek it out when I was away. And I think it's an instrument that's more specific to the Andes, but you find it in Colombia as well. And I was sneaking up on a guy that was playing. This is kind of an evening on the coast in Colombia. So I kind of was just on the periphery, just listening in. And it was really beautiful because it's a magical sound, and that overlaid with just the ambience of the evening, it does really invite you into the feeling of Colombia. And I think it's a beautiful clip to pull you into the idea of Latin America. So I headed to Minca, which was a small town up in the mountains by the Caribbean coast. And it's so beautiful because you can see the coast from where you are. And I stayed with this lady in her house, which was on an amazing veranda. And one night I went to a bar for a beer, and there happened to be a band playing, and this band was a cumbia band, which is quite a traditional style of music that you hear on the Caribbean coast. It often has a clarinet line, and it's kind of a very... I don't know how to translate it in, like... It's a very kind of feel-good style of music that you would hear, I guess, in the countryside a lot, as well as on the coast. So I met the band, and I invited them to come play at the house. And I said that I was looking for musicians to talk to, and I wanted to capture different kinds of music. And they were more than happy to come and share their music with me. So it was an amazing and a very intimate opportunity to hear them play. So I bought some beers and some crisps, and we sat around all evening. And again, it was one of those beautiful evenings where it was very warm. There were insects in the background kind of singing along. The first recording is one of the men in the band who was playing classical guitar, kind of serenading. And then following that, Sonia is singing. So Sonia was the lead singer of the band and the clarinet player. And she had a fantastic voice.
Sequías, de las altas cumbres desciende el agua, alumbrando el vino de mis acequias. Río de amor, vendimiador, padre de las cosechas. Río de amor, vendimiador, padre de las cosechas. Tierra mía gestando el vino, rayo de sol, su corazón canta.
llorando y los he visto llorando cuando en las tardes los estremece el viento en los valles. Estremece el viento en los valles. También los he visto alegres, entrelazados, mirarse al río. Danzan alegres de canto, quedan las mirlas y las cigarras. O envueltos en polvaredas que se levantan en los caminos, caminos que azota el viento al paso alegre del campesino. También los he visto alegres, entrelazados, mirarse al río. Danzan alegres de cantos que dan las mirlas y las cigarras, o envueltos en polvaredas que se levantan en los caminos, caminos que azota el viento al paso alegre del campesino. Y todos vamos llorando.
So exploring the music in itself was amazing, but as I spent time in the mountains in Colombia, my listening opened so much more to the mountains themselves, and in that, just the insects and the life that exists in those mountains. It's a very unique ecosystem, and I, for the first time, really realized the magic of recording and being able to capture the animation of a place. And one evening we kind of climbed up to see a sunset, and the cicadas, which is kind of, they're quite small insects that you find in tropical countries, and you find them in Australia as well, but they just sing so loudly, and we had this absolute night chorus of cicadas, and it was like, I compared it to industrial noise. I felt like we could be in like nature's factory. And it's, you can kind of hear how the sound fluctuates in and out, and they're kind of singing out to each other, and there's so many layers to that sound. I just thought, I have to capture, this is one of the moments where I kind of pulled out my recorder very quickly because I wanted to capture just the intensity of it. Yeah, so after I spent this time on the coast, the lady I was staying with advised me that there was this accordion festival happening in Valle du Par, which is towards Venezuela. And she said, if you want to experience Colombian music, go there. So I looked it up, and so it's basically like a vallenato festival. And vallenato, to introduce it, is like this kind of cowboy country music. It's very traditional. It's all about seducing women and kind of living the Colombian cowboy life, and it always has accordions in it, and you hear it kind of buzzes through radios and tinny speakers. You kind of hear it through phones. It's one of those sounds that you just captures countryside Colombia. So I had this festival in sight, and so I met my friend Bexy in Minka, and I had said to her at the end of us both staying there, by the way, I'm going to this festival. Is there any chance you want to come? There's probably going to be absolutely no tourists at all, because an accordion festival might not be on everyone's top list of Colombian things to see and do. But she said, sure, I'll meet you there. So I think it was maybe a week later, we met each other at the bus station in Valle du Par and had this absolutely strange and hilarious weekend. We were basically taken in by so many Colombian people, because I think a beautiful thing about Colombian culture is that they are so welcoming. They love the fact that foreigners are in Colombia. They love the fact they're interested in their music. We were invited into so many kind of street parties and conversations, and we had so much fun just meeting people there. And we stood out like sore thumbs, if I can take that expression like that. And yeah, we saw kind of competitions in accordion playing, and there was some. They're kind of cowboy characters playing their kind of really manically fast melodies together. There were some indigenous musicians there. And we got to see some really interesting representations of music on the coast. So I'm trying to think what the other city's name is. I hate to do this, but famously the city where Shakira comes from.
Oh, I don't even know that.
It will come back to me, but basically I was researching instruments from that part of the coast, and they almost sound Scottish. There's like a weird Celtic crossover between some of the instruments. And I don't know how there's lots of stories and fables about how, say, the accordion ended up in Colombia, kind of from shipwrecks and all of these things. And I can kind of entertain all of them. But yeah, I had this hilarious time, and I got to record lots of street musicians and warm-ups and just people who were happy to see me there and interested. So I'll play some of those for you now. So just talking slightly more about the vallenato, which I think lots of Colombians don't like as much as lots of Colombians do like. So the accordion is an interesting instrument in that kind of music. So it first arrived in the arms of a German traveller in 1929. Another more exciting story claims that it was discovered in the treasure chest of a sunken ship off the Caribbean coast and then brought to land. And the sound of the accordion itself was claimed to give power to bring back the dead. And as I've written before, I was talking about the accordion plays a central place in the often lamenting sounds of Colombian coastal music. And its history is very much entwined with the African slaves brought to Colombia in the early settlements. After kind of a long day of watching music. We got a taxi home and the taxi driver kind of turns to me and says, oh, so you like Vernato then? And I kind of said, yeah, it's interesting. I'm listening to it and enjoying it. And he said, can I sing to you? And which I, of course, replied, yes.
Absolutely.
So this is him serenading. De verdad y con razón estoy contento, porque ya encontré la muchachita que he soñado. Ya no puedo vivir sin ti, te amo y nunca te voy a dejar. Por siempre y para siempre tú serás, ay de mi vida lo más lindo. Te juro me siento feliz y a todo el mundo le voy a gritar. Que mi alma solo pertenece a ti, gracias por estar conmigo, conmigo.
¿Y viene el otro pedazo ahora?
Si me preocupaba. Next, on the trip, I went down to Ecuador to meet my friend, and I went with my friend Ollie, and we had a really magical few days. We went to a fishing village, and it was kind of dead season there, so... Yeah, we spent a pretty isolated 3 days on a hostel on a beach where if you got home too late, the tide was too far in and you had to kind of go through a swamp to get there. So always very anxious about getting home early. And then one evening we walked to a black sands beach, which you can find in Ecuador. And the sand is glittering and dark, and when sunset it's profoundly beautiful. And we were walking home and it was kind of the sun had set and it was dark and it was really peaceful. We were kind of joking about trying to hitch a ride home and obviously no one would pick us up. So we were just walking down this kind of long silent road, and I had to record it because there was something really magic about that scene. And it's also nice as well. You can hear the kind of motorbikes going past and you get that sense of your body in a place, and I think even just wearing headphones you can hear the movement as it crosses you. And I actually used this recording in a demo I was writing, because I found some of these sounds have been really huge sources of inspiration and of creativity. And there was a song I wrote as a lullaby, and I felt this added a whole new story to it. So that was about something else, but this really added a kind of narrative without really meaning to. So yeah, here it is. The next recording is in Peru, so we traveled down, well, I met my friend in Lima, and then we traveled down south, heading more towards Bolivia, and I was really interested in, again, seeing how music shifts as it responds to geography and space. So the music that you find across the Andes is very airy. There's lots of pan flutes. It kind of... it reflects in some way, I think, the vastness and the airiness of the landscape there. So in this recording, you hear the a Sucuris band, and they're playing traditional Andean panpipes. And I think there were 16 panpipes in this. So it was quite a funny story in how we found it, because we were basically going out for a meal in a beautiful city called Arequipa, in the south of Peru, and We walked into a square, and I heard this echo of pan pipes, and I'd been so keen to record some. So I was really excited and thought, this is the moment I get to record some. But we couldn't find where it was coming from, and we kind of joked about this game of kind of following the sound and seeing where we end up. But we were quite adamant about finding the source of it, but we just couldn't see it anywhere. And then I thought, maybe it's coming from above. So we climbed one level of stairs and we got closer to it and were really pleased about this, and then went through a restaurant through like a back of a kitchen and then went up another set of stairs and we found on the top of a roof in the, on this overlooking the square, this whole band practicing for, they said it was a festival near Bolivia, and yeah, they were all trying to like negotiate their 16 part harmonies on these pan pipes, and I just said, oh, can we, you know, buy a beer and stay and watch you guys and maybe record some, and they said yes. So I got this incredible opportunity to have a private show of this Securus band. So yeah, this is a recording. We travelled to Puno, which is a really high up city off Lake Titicaca. It's really, really high up. So I think you're talking like, I think it's 3,600 metres up. So at that point, the altitude really kicked in. I remember I was feeling pretty terrible at the time, but we wanted to go down to the lake and at least see some of the... basically, it's... a bunch of islands that float on the lake, and they're almost like visibly made out of straw, and the indigenous people have, they say they've lived there for a really, really long time, and they speak Quechua there. So we wanted to have a look around and get on the lake, and a lady approached us and was offering to sing in Quechua, so I scrambled for my recorder and got a little bit of it. I remember this morning because it was the last morning of the trip, and we were in Lima again, and Lima, I loved it. I think it's a beautiful city. It's quite big and industrial in a sense, but it has this beautiful fog that comes in from the ocean every morning, so you get these very moody ambient mornings that transition into an amazing blue sky. But we were still in the morning and we decided to take a walk by the beach, and kind of soak in the last moments of the trip and just, I don't know, just reflect on the last few weeks. And I hadn't actually taken many recordings of the ocean, even though I seemed to be near it all the time. So I wanted to capture how the ocean was pulling against the rocks and it was creating this really nice kind of watery, squelchy sound. And you can hear Bex in the background, and we're just having a conversation. It was interesting after all of these experiences, trying to first compress them together and just to, because it, experience just swirls around and it's so lucid, and I couldn't tell you most of the time where I was in 3 months. It was like this kind of dream, which I've put back together through sound. And the recordings pull me back to different places, but I probably couldn't record them otherwise. So it's an interesting, it's a memory bank, and one day I want to really like archive it all, and if I have children they'll be able to hear it as well, so like they'll, you know, experience it in some sense like I did. It was a shift in gear returning back to London, because I have this, I've had this kind of love-hate relationship with the city, as many people do, in the way that it's a harsh place. The winters are too long. It's very noisy. It's quite dirty. But in the same sense, it's the most stimulating, vibrant, exciting place you'll ever go. And it's a patchwork of identities and cultures and sounds. It was a change in rhythm going from the kind of slow lull of lots of rural South America, and just the music itself, I really missed it going home. And just the way that, you know, like in Cuba, you've got this beautiful kind of salsa seeping from each doorway, and going home thinking, oh, this is a far more silent and noisy place, to finding noise as the sound I don't want to hear. So buses and cars and things, and kind of wishing that I was back. But then it was a challenging shift to go home, but also I kind of welcomed it as well. I wanted the rootedness and the place and the home. And then I found, as I was saying earlier on, I really brought that capacity for listening back with me. And I did find that I'd come back to a new city. I was engaging with it in a totally unique, new way. I paid more attention to things. I stopped more in the street. I engaged with things more. From just like walking in a park and listening to things to staying an extra 10 seconds to hear a busker. So rhythmically, much faster, a more stressful place to be. But in many ways, it was a reinvigorated place for me.
Thanks for listening to Wax Lyrical. We'll be back again in a fortnight. Make sure to tell your friends, hit that like and subscribe. Big shout out to Flo this week for bringing in all of her travel recordings. Absolutely incredible stuff. See you next time.